Hello, my fellow hunters. This is Rosha Scheib with another hunter update, or hunt update, if you will. Today is June 10th. So far as the recording of this particular episode of Satoshi's Treasure Hunters, there has not been a new clue released for a new key as of the recording. So we are pretty much kind of at a momentum kind of at a standstill, if you will. And here's the reason why. So let's have a look at where we're at as far as the hunt goes. So far, we have the Earth Key, the Ubon Key still out. The Clan Key ticker is June 15th. Midnight GMT time is when if your particular clan has completed the task of having the most successful, longest consecutive clan chain, if you will, then you get this unique key. So we have all the way to June 15th to receive that revelation. The business key and the art key, which is not on the site, is also out. So we have the earth key, the bunk key, the business key, the art tour key, and the clan key. Five keys out. And there's really, everyone's pretty much still stuck in the same spot of the earth key and the Ubon key. The clan key, there's different groups trying different things. I'll show you some of that. It's interesting what people are attempting to do. And we'll get into it a little bit. I kind of touched on it on Clue Day, but I'm going to go a little bit in depth why I don't think this particular key is going to get much traction within the community, because I'm going to discuss privacy and its association with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general, and its association, or at least the thread, if you will, within the cryptocurrency community. So that's where we stand as far as the keys go. It's progressing. It is what it is. I did want to talk about that, about some groups. And I've been talking about PGP, which I will basically say that I've been attempting to do a PGP breakdown, if you will, or explainer, and I just don't feel comfortable releasing the episode. I personally understand it, but I don't think I'm conveying the information in a manner that anyone can understand, and I don't want to misinform people or confuse them. So basically what I want to talk about when it comes to PGP is that it's just a verifying mechanism. As you can see here through the Blockstream satellite communication, when it comes to the clue for the art tour, if you will, the message, which is 323, and you can find it on the Hunt is On site. The clue is, we're taking some time to cultivate our appreciation in the arts. Remember, as Bob Ross says, we don't make mistakes, just happy little accidents. First stop on the ST art tour, and then has the website. Of course, art is often a must be seen in person to be fully appreciated. If one is in any rush to appreciate the piece, a large expenditure of worthless fiat may be necessary to gain access. If one is a bit more patient, the work can be viewed for free a tad later. And then it's signed by the game maker's release key, which you can verify through Keybase or any PGP decryptor, where you can, when you take the public key, take the messenger and verify the information. We already went through this when they first released their key through Keybase. So I just wanted to state, to kind of reiterate that it's important that when they release these, release this information through the Blockstream site, that it's signed and verified. So other hunt news, their email was very behind when it came to releasing information. It was actually 2 days behind when it came to the clan key, which was a little surprising. They still haven't updated their SMS method. There still hasn't been a blog post by Eric explaining or breaking down. He stated it in one of the Telegram chats, the unofficial one, if you will, that he was more than willing to kind of break down how people could have solved the hunted key and found Field Agents 2 and 3. That hasn't happened. The releasing of the public address has not occurred by the game makers, indicating the bitcoins that are available, if you will, what that exact amount is. Let's see, any tools that would be associated with the hunt has not been released. And there really isn't a consistent, like, timeline frame work, if you will, like how long this game is going to be. It's just a little weird. But this game started in April, all of May. We're in June. I say around July, towards the end of July, I think the people are going to start pressing more. Right now, the summer time, you know, people are getting out of school, you know, kids, work stuff, vacation. So there's a bit of a lull of activity that just happens in general in cryptocurrency space. There's always a dip between May, June, July, and August of people's activities, just by the very nature of how young the space is, but the people that participate in the space. Many people were, you know, seen tales of middle school teenagers, 2009. It's now 10 years later. So if they were maybe in high school, they just, you know, finished up college, master's, you know, getting started in jobs, things of that nature. On the very lowest end, if they started like in the sixth grade or something like that, they're just midway through college possibly. Space is fairly young in that sense. They may have not started families because people of this generation started families a little bit later, or they just started to have small kids. So the, you know, the space when it comes to summertime is very reflective of that. It's just, there's just a dip, just a lull, if you will. So I anticipate that perhaps things will pick up again in the fall as far as activity participants, unless something mega or major occurs to where there's a significant traction when it comes on behalf of the game makers and releasing the keys and getting some more excitement when it comes to people participating, you know, solving the puzzles, getting the keys and moving on to the, you know, the next key and just racking up those keys, if you will, until they're, you know, we reach the point to where this thing is solved. But we're a long way from there. Another thing I noticed when I was just looking through the block stream and any information about the Satoshi Treasure Hunt, I found that the Dream Hunter team is coming. Satoshi Treasure staff, be careful. Other hunters of the world, take your keyboards and join our elite team. And then this number information right here, I haven't personally deciphered it yet. But I also haven't put too much effort into it. I just found it very interesting that there's possibly another public team or clan, if you will, out there. And then let's kind of look at the Twitter, if you will. So in the Proof of Work newsletter, Eric, which is a newsletter he's been doing for some time, it gathers the news around the space and some very interesting projects that are occurring across the spectrum. It's not Bitcoin exclusive. Anything that is seeking to improve the cryptocurrency community that is legitimate. He has been keeping track of various projects and information within the particular newsletter. So it's a great perusal, if you will, of what's happening in the space and having an idea of different projects that are happening, their progress, that are popping up, that are interesting. Another one would be the Bitcoin OpTech, which is very Bitcoin specific. It is very detailed. They've been doing a series of posts explaining Betch 32, which is an address format of a mechanism and means of making it just fundamentally easier to utilize Bitcoin, like on the under the hood, if you will, when it comes to addresses and UTXOs and privacy, and why it's important to have that particular address format and how well it's going to adopt and what it does and what it is doing. And that's called Bitcoin Optect. As well as the different BIPs and the proposals from Taproot, Lightning, even a little bit about Wimble and Grind, when those particular papers came out, breakout down in those, different privacy proposals, what's just basically going on within the Bitcoin space, if you will. So there's various clans, Steam Clan, San Diego Crypto Clan, all these clans are attempting or trying to, as presidents, trying to race towards June 15th, midnight GMT town, GMT time, to find out if they are going to be the winners of the unique key. It'd be interesting to see if any clan that wins will release that key to public or keep it to themselves, or maybe down the line, because they're the only ones that have it. I imagine once you get closer to towards the 400 number with these unsolved keys or unique keys, that there might be a marketplace to start selling those keys as of, maybe you're so far behind that you're not able to get close to that 400, but you have certain keys where you can kind of guess or hazard a guess or even an educated guess of like what point people are and start a bidding process. But we are a long ways from there. And one last bit as far as updates go, Armchair Ventures is a YouTube channel that is also following the Satoshi Treasure Hunt. They did a shout out to me, so I'm doing a shout out back to them. I will have a link in the show notes to their channel, as well as the end of the video. I will have a link to their channel as well. And in the show notes, I have a link to the other channels that I've observed in the space that are public and are on YouTube that are disclosing and following the hunt. I will also look at DLive, BitTube, and any other video services out there that people might be interested in watching and helping them follow along what's happening within the Satoshi Hunter space. A number of these channels, these guys are devs or at least have a familiarity with the technology as far as having participated in Capture the Flags and other puzzle games, if you will, and break down certain mechanisms and means of finding and breaking down the different clues, if you will. So there'll be a link of different YouTube channels in the show notes. And that's pretty much it as far as updating on what's happening with the clan key and just in general what's happening with the hunt. I really have nothing much else to say other than that I will be doing a book review of The Burning Chrome. I'll be releasing that probably Tuesday. That was the book that was one of the objects that you had to give to Field Agent 2 once you found him, in order to obtain the key from him. It is a William Gibson short story collection. Very fascinating set of short stories. I had some thoughts about possibly there might be some hints or clues, if you will, with that particular book when it comes to the hunt. But in general, it'll just be an overall review of that particular set of short stories. I'm still going through the William Gibson's catalog. Almost done, and I'll just here and there, we'll just, particularly with it comes with The Sprawl, which is his most famous trilogy of books as the Necromancer, which is one of the books he's most famous for. I will also doing a book review on that. And then I will talk about some of his other stuff as I feel it suits it, feel it kind of suits the needs of the hunt, if you will. But I felt it was important just for my education to have a refamiliarity with his work, because it's clearly a bit of an influence and hints of verbiage and usage, and just from the game makers themselves, particularly Eric talking about William Gibson as an influence on the game and cyberpunk in general. All right, so let's talk about privacy. So what is privacy? I'm just going to go straight to the Wicca.
give the most basic description, if you will. Privacy is the ability of an individual or group to seclude themselves of information about themselves and therefore express themselves selectively. The boundaries and content of what is considered private differ among cultures and individuals but share the common themes. When something is private to a person, it usually means that it's something inherently special or sensitive to them. The domain of privacy particularly overlaps with security, confidentiality, which should include the concept of appropriate use as well as protection of information. Privacy may also take the form of bodily integrity. The right not to be subject to unsanctioned invasion of privacy by the government, corporations, or individuals is part of many countries' privacy laws, and in some cases, constitutions. All countries have laws which some way limit privacy. As an example of this law would be concerning taxation, which normally requires the sharing information about personal income or earnings. In some countries, individual privacy may conflict with freedom of speech laws, and some laws may require public disclosure information, which would be considered private in other countries and cultures. This was a major concern in the United States with the Supreme Court passage of Citizens United. Privacy may be a voluntary sacrifice, normally in exchange for a perceived benefit, and very often with specific dangers and losses, although it's a very strategic view of human relationship. For example, people may be ready to reveal their name if that allows them to promote trust by others and thus build meaningful social relations. Research shows that people are more willing to voluntarily sacrifice their privacy if the data gathered is seen to be transparent as to what information is gathered and how it is used. And I think we can... Well, wait. Okay. In the business world, a person may volunteer personal details, often for advertising purposes, in order to gamble or win a prize. A person may also disclose personal information as part of being an executive for a publicly traded company in the U.S. pursuant to federal security laws. Personal information, which is voluntarily shared but sometimes stolen or misused, can be led to identity theft. The concept of universal individual privacy is a modern construct primarily associated with Western culture, British and North America in particular, and remained virtually unknown in some cultures until recent time. According to some research, the concept sets Anglo-American culture apart from Western European cultures such as French or Italian. Most cultures, however, recognize the abilities of individuals to withhold certain parts of their personal information from wider society, closing the door to one's home, for example. The distinction or overlap between secrecy and privacy is ontologically subtle, which is why the word privacy is an example of an untranslatable lexeme. So it's not a word that's in pretty much every kind of language. And many languages do not have a specific word for privacy. Such languages either use a complex description to translate the term, such as the Russian combining the meaning of solitude, secrecy, and private life, or borrow from the English privacy, such as Indonesia uses privacy or Italian la privacy. The distinction hinges on the distinctness of interests of parties, persons, or groups, who can have emetic variations depending on cultural mores or individualism and collectivism, and the negotiation between individual rights and groups. The difference is sometimes expressed humorously as, when I withhold information, it is privacy. When you hold information, it's secrecy. So there you go with the basic kind of concept and description. Now, within the space of cryptocurrency, in particular with Bitcoin, Bitcoin is a pseudonymous economic system. You do not have to disclose your personal information or data if you don't want to. And if you're careful enough, there are these things called blockchain explorers, your Bitcoin or Bitcoin addresses or activity through, you know, social media usage or data tracking, if you will, cannot or will not be traced back to you if you're careful enough. But when it comes to Bitcoin addresses, the general use rule is to use a different address for each transaction. If you can, you should always use CoinJoin to mix your Bitcoins for your transaction to increase your fungibility and your anonymity from blockchain explorers, so no one can know like where you received your Bitcoin or where your Bitcoin comes from, and kind of obfuscate the transaction itself so you can have some privacy and anonymity. And fundamentally, within a space, you know, privacy is heavily emphasized for people to be able to utilize as a mechanism, as a tool, as an inherent right, if you will. Now, Bitcoin was not by design built in with some of the privacy protections that people necessarily wanted. For example, the public blockchain, the whole point of it is it's extremely transparent. You know where the coins are going or moving across the blockchain, so you know the amount to each associated address. And with that, if someone's identity is associated or tagged, for example, I've done this in the past and will continue to do so. I will share a public address for donations or whatever. That address will be associated forever with my identity. And so some people may not want to send Bitcoin to that because my identity is associated with it, or because they know that public address, they know how, you know, how much of a Bitcoin I have. And that could potentially make me a target for theft or intimidation or things of that nature. So for some people, that's a bit of an issue, and there's different coins that attempted to address that. There's different mechanisms like Grin, Mimblewimble, the mechanism of CoinJoin to obfuscate where coins come from and where they're going. Privacy-focused wallets like Wasabi, you know, address, and Samurai Wallet address to the ability for people to, you know, obfuscate their privacy while still maintaining the transactional level of everyone knows where the Bitcoins are going, are kind of going to. In a sense, they know how many Bitcoins are in existence, how many Bitcoins are being transacted. Everything in that sense, the value sense, is public in nature. So you don't have the issues of double spending or faking coins or in the case of faking coins, forgeries, things of that nature. And because of this, you know, people have done different ways to making their stuff anonymous, you know, cash buys, not KYCing or AMLing themselves on exchanges, going peer-to-peer, trying to earn their crypto directly, or if they already had Bitcoin, you know, mining it directly themselves, or other coins, and then shifting or exchanging them through what used to be a thing, Shapeshift. You could do so without KYC and AML in yourself, but that's not the case anymore. As those mechanisms of exchanges and trading coins are becoming increasingly regulated, the ability to not hand over your personal identification is becoming a bit more difficult for many different people. And because of these things, people, you know, wish to retain their privacy within this space. It's when the points of that gravitated people to this space, to cryptocurrency, to this new economic system, was the ability to be private, to be discreet, if you will. And not for necessarily for nefarious purchases or designs, you know, like there's always an overemphasis on, you know, purchasing of drugs, narcotics, sex trafficking, but more like prostitution and stuff like that, not necessarily sex trafficking. And so, you know, the vices, if you will. And I think what gets lost in the sauce with all that is, I just won't get into that. But just basically people, one of the things, the drawing to Bitcoin is the ability to be private, to be anonymous. And so in participating in the Satoshi treasure hunt game, in which the prize pool is the value of $1 million in USD, many people, you know, are expecting to somewhat participate in this game, if you will. Much of it is being done online. They're using, you know, Discord chats or some chat mechanism to gather, Telegram, using handles and not, you know, full names or government names to participate in this game. They don't necessarily wish to or want to disclose their personal information. Like, there, for example, there's a lot of private groups out there that nobody's aware or knows about simply for the fact that they're not sharing their information via social media and are just keeping within their group. They're probably fairly small. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them are actually fairly large. But for the most part, you have no way of knowing exactly how many people are participating in the game and working together because they've chosen not to disclose that information. They chose to be private. And so when you have a community from the very beginning, from like pretty much 2009, from the very founder of this current iteration of peer-to-peer monetary value of Satoshi Nakamoto, which is a pseudonym for either a group of individuals, a single individual, male, female. Nobody is certain. There are certain traits people may associate with Satoshi Nakamoto for the fact that the language is utilized. You can kind of get the age of the person. The fact that it most likely is a male individual, the hours of workage. I mean, there's so much that's been, you know, tea leaf through, if you will, about Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator and author of the Bitcoin white paper and the first Bitcoin software program. But Satoshi Nakamoto was very careful about any kind of indicator or metadata being disclosed. Didn't talk about foods, movies, any kind of personality traits that you might associate. There wasn't really too much humor or jokes, if you will, that could kind of convey any kind of sense of history or ethnicity or age, if you will. Wouldn't answer any type of personal questions, never spoke to anybody through voice or even a voice modification. Did many, you know, use privacy focused email. Kept and retained enough privacy, if you will, to make it very difficult to find out who this individual is. And basically, you know, bounce when they chose to bounce. And because of that, and because of the emphasis on privacy or the attempt to be private, you know, people have taken that as a strong trait and something to model themselves after. You have, and I have a link in the show notes, people like Jameson Lopp, who had, unfortunately, had experience with swatting and had his privacy information doxed. I have a link in the description about what doxing is. You know, James Lopp talked about the extreme measures that he has taken in order to protect his family from not only just the way that he handles his own, you know, crypto side business, but he still has, we all still operate in a fiat system, like the different types of methods that he's done for, you know, debit and credit cards, purchasing of property, not just, you know, the home, but the car, even things like, you know, Netflix subscriptions and what, you know, VPNs and, you know, trying to get, you know, his data that is already in existence. There are certain methods for different, like from the credit card, the credit bureau companies to even the data brokers of getting that information off or done, changing of habits, things that he has done, or even the type of jobs and the nature of the jobs he chooses in order to protect the privacy of himself and his family. And he's done a few different essays on the subject and has made efforts to make sure that he maintains his privacy so that that his family is not placed in danger for the simple fact that someone wants to disagree with them. So they do a SWAT on his home that puts not only his life, but the life of his family in danger. And that's an extreme measure, and it's a very costly measure, particularly in this day and age. And he states that he's in pretty much in a very privileged position to be able to take the certain methodologies that he does. And he breaks down, you know, what the cost is, and, you know, some cases a minimum of $5,000 to $30,000 a year to protect his privacy. And so when you have that, and you have the fact that in essence, cryptocurrency comes from the cypherpunk movement, you know, this kind of anarchist leaning, if you will, movement of all these different, you know, collective minds and groups that, you know, emphasize on privacy, emphasize on freedom of movement, freedom of communication, the ability to dispense information, encouragement of being, you know, peer-to-peer, decentralized, can be large, but not any kind of central authority or structure of governments, if you will. And keeping yourself, you know, anonymous was, you know, something that emphasized, you know, protect one's identity. Because it's very political, this movement. And cryptocurrency in and of itself is very political. Keeping yourself, you know, kind of hidden by default. To have a clue, if you will, the ability to get a key in which you have to disclose your face, if you will, in order to participate. It seems that and I stated this when the clue day, you know, dropped on clue day, that the game makers are failing to understand their audience, if you will. Now, as a mechanism, I can understand that you don't want to have like the same, you know, black hooded, you know, banana face over and over again to create a blockchain. But I don't think that fundamentally matters if the whole purpose is to create a series of blocks. A single individual could, in essence, you know, do block 0 and then block 1 and block 2 and block 3 and do the same, you know, hand movement and gesture and be outside and do all these things and in essence create a blockchain, a continuous chain, as long as they keep, you know, the point is, you know, you have to be outside, you have to have your face, you have to have your phone up and be recorded, if you will. The whole numbering, if you will, the video and the movement and things of that nature. And I would, you know, maybe the person can switch up the clothes or whatever, you know, go from blue, red, green, yellow, like maybe they have a bunch of hoodies or t-shirts or something of that nature. Not being able to keep their face hidden, even when the game makers give the fact that you can have a Twitter handle just created for the purpose of creating or participating in the clan key block making. I think this is why some clans don't have that many people in their chain, even if their groups themselves are very large, or the fact that groups are thinking of ways of either, and I talked about this, about purchasing, you know, people's time and being able to create the biggest chain, if you will, from people that are not really participants of the game, but are there for the very purpose, sole purpose of creating this continuous blockchain, the longest blockchain, if you will, up to June 15th. So I think what I'm getting at too is, like I said, I don't believe the game makers fundamentally understand their audience. Now, I get why on a marketing standpoint, this is something that they would want to do, because then they can, you know, tout that in videos and share it and try to get it viral. But you're dealing with a group of people that they're not interested in that internet fame. They're not interested in putting themselves fully out there. They're more than willing to participate in this game. They're even willing to go out to different types of locations. And there are ways to be in a public space and still be private. You know, you wear a hoodie, you wear some glasses, you wear a hat. You can obfuscate your face to prevent your identity from being revealed, just in case there's any kind of surveillance. For most places, if there's any kind of like videography or filming going on, you have to have a permit to do that. So you don't have to sign it, you know, the disclosure that allow for someone to utilize your face or information for marketing purposes. And if there's like one of those signs, I see it quite a few places, in places like large cities I've lived in, where there's filming going on, where just by the mere fact that if you go past this sign, your image can be utilized, you have the mechanism or the means to navigate around that space if you have to. In some cases, you can't, because maybe the building or the place you need to go to might be in that space. So maybe you call ahead and figure out when they were going to finish filming and if you can come back. But in some cases, that is not convenient. And so it's a bit of annoyance, if you will. And so if you really want to protect your privacy, you kind of cover it up so that your image is not something that would be a desirable usage. And if it is, your face is covered up and nobody's going to know who that figure is. So I hope it goes well for the different clans that are operating out there and who are participating in this particular key. It will be interesting to see who actually comes up on top. There's a significant amount of time. As we're recording this episode, it is June 8th. We have all the way to June 15th. So that is it for this episode. What you can look forward to is, you know, when Clue Day happens, I will do a Clue Day video. I also will be doing a video about, a video review of the book Burning Chrome, which was one of the objects you had to give to one of the field agents. I did look at the other two books, and let's just say that their understanding is above my pay grade, is the best, simplest explanation is why I'm not reviewing those particular books. I also will be, I'm almost, not completely, but I also will be pretty much wrapped up with the William Gibson books, and I will be reviewing different books I think that might have some impact on the hunt itself. So you can look forward to those videos down the line. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and this is Hiroshi Shive, Satoshi Treasure Hunters, and on with the hunt.